Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Division 7 of the Colorado Court of Appeals. This is Judges Russell, Jones, and Connolly this afternoon. We have four cases set for the afternoon docket, beginning with Plains Cooperative against the Board of County Commissioners of Washington County. I see the Councilor President set up. Thank you very much for that. You may begin.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Ed Gleason. I'm of the firm Rothgerber, Johnson & Lyons, and I'm appearing here this afternoon as counsel for the appellant, the Board of County Commissioners of Washington County. The decision of the trial court should be reversed because it is based on a statutory exclusion that does not exist. The statute at issue in this case is Article 5.5 of Title 38 of the Colorado Revised Statutes, and that deals with the use of public rights of way by telecommunications providers. I think everyone agrees that it was the intent of that legislation, was the intent of the legislation, to facilitate the expansion of telecommunication services in Colorado. And to that end, the statute provides that telecommunications providers may use the public roadways for the laying of their cable. However, the statute also provides in Section 106 that in order to do that, the telecommunication provider must first obtain the local government's consent to such use. And then that brings us to Section 107, which is the provision of the statute that's at issue here. That authorizes the local government to charge the telecommunications provider a public highway construction permit fee. But it limits the amount of that fee, and the critical provision of the statute is Section 107(1)(b), which provides that the fees levied by the political subdivision must be reasonably related to the costs directly incurred by the political subdivision in providing services relating to the granting of the permit. And it goes on to provide that the fee must also, that those fees and charges must also be reasonably related in time to the occurrence of the costs.
Mr. Gleason, let me ask you this. Would you concede that these restrictions go way beyond the Federal Telecommunications Act?
I don't know, to be honest, Your Honor. I don't know.
Well, didn't the Colorado legislature mean to pretty strictly limit the permissible fees that could be charged for construction permits?
I wouldn't say strictly limit. I think what I think the legislature meant to do by this legislation is to say you may not view this as a revenue-raising opportunity. You may not, and this is consistent with some of the legislative history that was talked about in the answer and reply briefs, you, the local government, may not, when the telecommunications provider comes along, say, I'm going to charge a big fee or I'm going to exact some sort of in-kind donation or anything of the sort, that what you do in regard to your fee must be revenue neutral.
Well, it didn't say that. It says related to the granting or administration of permits.
Yes. And I submit, Your Honor, that means the same thing. That the when it says it says reasonably related to the granting or administration of permits, that language, by the way, closely parallels the common law governing fee setting in Colorado. Cases, the leading case I think is Bloom versus Fort Collins, cited in the briefs, and there's a fair amount of Colorado law cited both in the briefs and in the trial court's order, the Bloom case, Bainbridge, and so forth.
And this goes further than Bainbridge because Bainbridge allows indirect costs. It says reasonably related to the direct costs or costs directly incurred.
I completely agree. The way I conceive of it, Your Honor, is there are fundamentally, the setting of fees is a determination for the Board of County Commissioners to make, but they have to act within some rails. And Bainbridge, the rails within which they have to act were narrowed by this statute. Bainbridge said it asked that that involved building permit fees. I was counsel on that case, so I can I'm quite familiar with it. That involved building permit fees in Douglas County, and this court held in the Bainbridge case that in setting fees, that the fees for the building permits had to be reasonably related to the county's costs. But those costs could take into account both direct and indirect costs. The legislature came along here and said, no, you may not take into account indirect costs. It did other things. It said you have the burden of proof, a fairly unusual provision that the defendant county has the burden of proof here. But it said, fundamentally, what it said is that, yes, you can recover your costs associated with the granting of the permit, but it must be reasonably, those costs must be reasonably related to the granting of the permit, must be reasonably related in time, and you have the burden of proof, and it can be only be direct costs. So that's the framework under which we're working here. The problem in this case is the trial judge said that I see in this statute an exclusion. I see an exclusion in this statute of the road reconstruction and maintenance costs that are going to result when you cut a road. And that exclusion is not expressed in the statute. And it's not the limitations that we're discussing, Your Honor, that certainly do not imply that particular types of costs, certain categories of costs are to be excluded. It simply says that the it certainly says to the political subdivision, you got to toe, you know, straight and narrow here. It's got to be direct costs, got to be reasonably related, reasonable in time. And you're going to have to, if somebody challenges you, you're going to have to, as the county did here, you're going to have to come forward and justify the costs you've charged. But it does not say that you only get part of your costs.
Counsel, as I understand your argument, is it's tied to the language of the statute. There would be a little question here if the language merely authorized the political subdivision to charge fees relating to the administration of permits. But it says granting or administration. So are you saying that maintenance fees could be reasonably related to the granting of permits?
Yes, the road fees. The fundamental principle of statutory interpretation is that every word in the statute is to be given meaning. The legislature used the disjunctive granting or administration. And the evidence that we presented to the trial court in the form of principally the engineer who testified as a road expert is when you say to a telecommunications provider, yes, you have our consent, here's a permit, cut the road, that act of granting that permit inexorably is going to lead to increased road maintenance costs. And he explained it all, and the trial court, I thought, did a good job in its order of summarizing the high points of the expert's testimony.
Let me explore that premise if I could. Is the granting of the permit going to lead to those costs, or the construction activities undertaken pursuant to the permit? Granting the permit, it costs whatever it costs, the paper, the review of the permit, the application. As I read the plain language of granting, you granted it. The granting of the permit didn't cost the county anything other than, I guess, the $300 per application fee they charged. Granting the permit's cheap. Maybe what the company does pursuant to the permit has consequences, but doesn't seem that's the granting of the permit. Why am I wrong on that?
I view the granting language as a but-for that concept. That the but-for the granting of the permit, if Plains had come along and said, we wish to cut your roads and the county said, no, you can't, then the costs in question here would not be incurred. When the county says yes and stamps the permit approved and says you may proceed to cut the roads, that act of granting the permit, and the record on this is clear, a lot of it's cited in the trial judge's order, that act of granting the permit necessarily means that the roads are going to be damaged.
Does it necessarily mean the contractor is going to follow through on the permit? Can somebody get a permit and decide that conditions have changed, we're not really going to cut the roads? But you still paid that cost of the permit, even if you decide I don't want to cut the roads.
Well, I think in that hypothetical, I think if Plains had applied for the permit and not proceeded to do the work for which it applied the permit, and the county collected the 14 cents a foot fee anyway, that obviously would be a different case. And I think there, Plains might have something to complain about.
So maybe the grant of the permit didn't really incur the cost then. Maybe it's what happened after the permit.
Well, the granting of the permit, I think the legislation, the goal of all of us here in interpreting and applying the statute is to give effect to what the legislature meant. What was the legislature trying to accomplish? We have various tools to do that, starting with the plain reading of the statute. So I think that would certainly be an extremely narrow reading of the statute, Your Honor. I'd submit that if there's the hypothetical possibility of an unusual circumstance of the type you described, and that would lead to a excessive fee, then you can never do it. I think that's an extreme case that I don't think should control how we apply the statute generally. I think the Supreme Court gave us some guidance, indirect. Certainly, they didn't directly address the question before the court now, in the Denver versus Quest case. And the Supreme Court there, and we quoted the passages in our briefs. The Supreme Court in the Denver versus Quest case said that under the statutory scheme that we have here, the local government can recover its costs with no qualification, no exceptions, no carve-outs, nothing of the sort. And as we argued in the brief, the reason that the Supreme Court had occasion to say that is because there was a challenge by Denver saying you're violating the state constitution, that you're that this statute, when it says that the telecommunications provider gets to use the public rights of way, that you're conferring a public benefit on a private party, and that violates the Constitution. And the Supreme Court came back in that case, and it also there was an inverse condemnation of takings claim. And the Supreme Court in that case emphasized, it held that no, that those were not, those concerns were not valid, and that is because, number one, this furthers a public purpose, a good purpose, a public interest in having the spread of telecommunications in Colorado. And furthermore, nothing is being given by the public entity to a private telecommunications provider because the statute says that the public entity can recover all of its costs related to the granting of the permit. So I submit that this statute, this statute needs to be read in context and against the backdrop of the law generally applicable to fee setting in Colorado. I don't think, I guess to come back, Judge Conley, to your earlier question, I don't think this has, it has a couple of new pronouncements, a couple of new features. You cannot recover indirect costs under the statute. And the public body has the burden of proof. But as far as the rest of it, that the costs for which the fee is imposed have to be reasonably related to the service provided, and that fundamentally that's a matter of, that's something that legislature delegated to the Board of County Commissioners, the body that's in charge.
As somebody experienced in this area and litigating Bainbridge, if you're advising the county and your concession just say you can't recover indirect costs, tell me what kind of cost the county would say. We'd like to charge this. Normally we could in terms of permit fees, but you would have to advise them no because of indirect costs that you can recover that. What's an example of that?
The county attorney. If the and that was one of the examples in Bainbridge cited by this court in the opinion. The direct costs would be the operator, the equipment out on the road, and the cost of the equipment, and the cost of the gravel that actually was placed on one of the cuts involved in this case, and so forth. Those are direct costs. If you say, in addition to that, in order to have the operator, the equipment employed by the county, you need a county attorney, and you need a board of county commissioners, and you need an office building, and all the rest. Those are indirect costs. Those cannot be taken into account. So when the legislature said direct costs, and that's an accounting concept, and we had an accountant, by the way, who testified without contradiction that these were direct costs, and that the direct costs do reasonably relate to the services for which the fee was imposed, and therefore there's compliance with the statute.
Mr. Gleason, I'm a little troubled by your assertion that there's a but-for test here, because a but-for test logically would encompass indirect costs. I mean, there can be indirect costs that would not have been incurred but for the granting of a permit. So it seems to me a but-for test is too broad here.
I'm not sure that's correct, Your Honor. And we're kind of in the accounting realm here now, but I'm not sure that's correct. And I think that's the reason the legislature had problems with indirect costs. The county attorney is going to be there, and he's going to draw his salary regardless of whether this road is repaired or not. And so the indirect costs by their nature, I think, and again, I'm sort of testifying about accounting here, but I think of indirect costs as fixed costs that are going to overhead costs, overhead that's there one way or the other. And I think the legislature was saying, we don't want you, we don't, you can't use your overhead in this, direct costs. This is to be revenue neutral, that this, when a telecommunications provider comes along and wants to use the county right away, you cannot use that, you can't be looking at that as a cash cow and saying, well, here's an opportunity for a tax or a franchise fee or anything of the sort. Nor, on the other hand, are the taxpayers to pay for the cost occasioned by the activities of a private telecommunications provider. So that's how I see it. I don't have much time left to reserve. In fact, I'm done. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Ed Zorn, 1653. I'm here on behalf of Plains Cooperative Telephone Association. May it please the court, Your Honor, just where we just were on there and talking about maybe terms of art in the accounting realm. The statute doesn't use the word direct cost. The statute speaks of costs directly incurred, which to me means you have to dig into your pocket and you have to pay the expense, pay the cost, and so there's a kind of a nicety there.
Council, can you give me an example of costs directly incurred?
Yes, sir. Those, again, to me, the way the statute is couched, in going back to that, the occurrence of such costs in one place and in another, costs directly incurred, it's something that can be identified as a cost to the county, their engineering time to review the plans, their inspection time to inspect the construction in progress.
By the example we just heard, wouldn't we say the engineers are already on staff? They're going to be paid no matter what.
That is true, but I believe in the spirit of the statute that you can allocate, as they no doubt have to do on a county level, to figure out their cost accounting, where their funds go. They have to say, well, the county engineer spent 45 minutes on the cemetery this morning and a half an hour on working on these construction permits. So I believe that it can be allocated. I believe there's probably staff that would allocate time to the granting or the administration of the permit. And the other piece of the language of the statute, and I provided a dissection, if you will, handout of 107 for the court, is that the statute indicates that these allowable fees, shall be reasonably related to the costs directly incurred in providing services relating to the granting or administration of the permit. And going back to Judge Connolly, I believe that these are services in granting and the administration of the construction permit, and doesn't go beyond that. It doesn't reach out into the future to try to anticipate future repairs, future.
Let me ask you this, Steve. I guess on this record, it seems that it's pretty uncontradicted. The engineer testified without contradiction that trenching inevitably weakens the roadbed and shortens the expected road life. I think on this record we have to accept that. I don't know if you accept that as a general matter. Would you agree that factually that on this record that is an inference we would have to draw?
When you say trenching or cutting in the road,
yeah,
the traveled roadway?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. But, so and if a telecommunications company is seeking permission to basically shorten the expected life of the roadway, it's your position under this statute that the county cannot recoup these costs?
Well, not with the evidence. The burden of proof was not carried here, Your Honor, because the engineer was not able to tell the court, the trial court, that this will shorten the life 5 years, 3 years, 2 years, or that there'll be repair costs in 10 years.
No, we the engineer said we cannot do it with precision. We could just say that inevitably and invariably over time, the trenching process is going to, and the, is the bottom line that the telecommunications companies trenching and cutting these roads get a free ride and don't have to pay for those costs.
They don't get a free ride, though, because they restore. Now, in the factual situation, the case at hand, of course, is that the requirement was bury your fiber optic cable in the ditch. And so it was. And so the only road surface disturbance was the crossings that were done. The court, I think, trial court questioned the county's method of charging road resurfacing, albeit gravel or dirt roads, resurfacing charges based upon the disturbance that took place in the ditch. There was no evidence that what the county might have to do, if anything, with regard to the disturbance in the ditch. Additionally, the telecommunications provider, Plains in this case, restored the property and received in February of 2006 a letter from the county saying everything is cool. You've restored the roads to their current standards.
Yeah, to the pre-existing condition, right?
Yes.
What if there were evidence that inevitably trenching is not going to restore the roads to the prior condition? Could the county simply say we're never going to grant a permit because it's just incapable of being restored to its prior condition because we know with testimony and expert evidence that over time it's invariably going to weaken roadbeds in a way that we can't measure with precision, but it's going to happen?
I think, frankly, Judge, that the only way to repair that situation based on the statute we have is for the county to go to the legislature and convince the legislature that that is true fact and is ascertainable to the point where it needs to be allowable within the construction permit process.
Council, do you draw a distinction between costs incurred relating to the granting of permits and a distinction between granting and administration?
I don't. The plain language, common usage to me, distinction I possibly could glean from that is, and I think it's too narrow, is that if it was limited to granting only, it would be up. I hand in my construction permit application, the county processes it, and they grant it, and that's it. That's granting, and that's the end of it. I believe the county would be within the statute, at least under the administration piece of it, to go out and inspect that work, to make sure the work was done, and the closing letter issued with regard to the project. Statute then, as I believe, is supported by the city of Denver Quest case, which is cited in the briefs, contrary to the county's position in this, and it's cited in the briefs, but I would just again call it to the attention of the court that, for instance, on page 752 of the decision, the Supreme Court, referring to SB 9610, indicated that it prohibits, and that's a quote, unquote, so it is definitely a limiting statute, prohibits political subdivisions from charging fees other than, quote, certain, close quote, permit fees that are reasonably related in time and occurrence to the costs directly incurred, to the costs spent, that you could put a dollar amount on and not say that this, we're collecting this, it's a contingent fee because we may have to do these repairs or maintenance in the future. The court then goes on at page 756, again, speaking directly about Senate Bill 9610, that it expressly grants providers the rights it intends them to have and expressly limits the authority of political subdivisions to regulate them. So again, it's clear, I think, the plain language of the statute in question is a limiting statute. It's not meant to branch out and be all-inclusive when we speak about the costs that can be charged within the construction fee. I would submit to the court that even if, for purposes of argument, the future anticipated repairs and maintenance fees are within the purview of the statute, that in this case, the trial court's decision must still be upheld because of the county's failure to carry the burden of proof as required in the statute. Again, if future maintenance amounts were allowed to be placed within the construction fee, the county must still, under their burden of proof provision, provide that these future expenses are reasonably related in time to they will be incurred in a reasonable relationship with the time of the fee. And the only evidence in the case at hand is we don't know. We don't know. The expert was a pavement expert dealing with natural earthen roads. The cable was buried in the ditch and not in the roadway. A number of things affect that, and the trial court indicated that it was not impressed with the experts and cited cases indicating that the court was within its discretion in not being bound by those opinions. Then finally, in the statute, the county has the burden of establishing that the fee schedule, the fees charged, are reasonably related to the direct costs incurred. The fee schedule in the case at hand dealt with rebuilding county roads. The accountant took into consideration the yards of gravel, the types of machinery necessary to spread that, to do all the things necessary to rebuild a roadway, when in fact the requirement was, and the disturbance of this particular situation was, in the ditch. Consequently, we were at apples and oranges on that. Secondly, the court noted that the fee schedule did not match the expert's opinion, in that the expert's opinion was that if it was a 6-inch plow-in cable as opposed to a 42-inch trenching job, that the disturbance was the same to the road, quote unquote. And nevertheless, the county provided for a fee schedule, as the court will see in the exhibits, that start out with the exact approximately the exact cost to rebuild a road in the lowest and the smallest width of disturbance to a 42-inch trench, which was 4 to 5 times the amount of money anticipated to rebuild the road. So there was no sound reason for the schedule. So based upon the briefs of the amicus in this matter, Your Honors, we would ask on behalf of Plains Cooperative Telephone that the decision of the trial court be affirmed in this matter. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Court thanks counsel for both sides for their arguments. This case will be deemed submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.